Yes, rain dance, of course, is a curious topic because everybody sort of starts to laugh or snicker when they hear the words rain dance. And I think of Indians, and that reminds me of the book of Frank Waters, the book of the Hopi. I think it's there somewhere that the Indians say, well, and then of course the rain dance. We do the rain dance, and then the people forget to bring their umbrella. The funny part of the rain dance is that and there are a couple of people who helped understand how it works. Essentially, it is a, let's say, micro-crystallization of the clouds in such a way that the water vapor in the cloud can find a surface on which it can condense. It is well known that rain normally starts on specks of sand or grains floating in the air, so that will then be the surface on which the water can condense, and once it starts to do that in condensing, there is a temperature change in the air around the water, a drop, and that triggers a cascade of temperature differences in the air around there. And what Wilhelm Reich discovered is that instead of having grains of sand to crystallize or condense water on, you can also use microwave radiation. In a way, he just discovered it because he used hollow tubes, and at some point he had hollow tubes in a pond standing there waiting for being used, and he realized that where the tubes were pointing, the air was different. Clouds would form or clouds would dissolve. And so he was able to realize that these hollow tubes would work like a kind of antenna, a resonator, like an organ pipe, and that the frequency, the high frequency, which could build up in that, let's say, organ pipe resonator, the hollow tube, actually beamed up in the sky and had an effect there. It's really worthwhile to read the books of Wilhelm Reich. It's not just that he was working with these frequencies by which you can actually interact with the vapor layers of the sky, but also he realized that there are a lot more of electromagnetic dynamics going on in our environment and in our own body. And that work on the body is called the orgone. Wilhelm Reich was a medical student, and then in Vienna and thereabouts he was trying to see why people didn't understand sex in a medical school training. Sex was not part of the curriculum, except that they knew about the reproductive organs and what they looked like. So he initiated more of a research into how it works and how you can work with it. At that time, it was mainly the poor where overpopulation was a problem, essentially because they used sex as a kind of anesthetic in their work conditions, but that also meant that they would have overpopulation, which again would mean that whatever money they could earn with their low income wages, they would have to use on getting food and shelter for a lot of children. So that's where birth control or birth regulation came into the story, and also the transition from reproductive sex to, let's call it, recreative sex. And that led to the understanding that orgasm is actually a bodily experience, which is perhaps better called not physical at all, but electromagnetic. And Wilhelm Reich also realized that there was quite a difference between the people who had a free orgasm or a non-free orgasm. A non-free orgasm is when they had expectations, and in a way had those block their experience, or the people who went to the experience without the expectation. And his conclusion that often people who had orgasm with those limitations of their projections of expectations might have criminal or antisocial or asocial tendencies. In his later work, he came to understand that this orgasmic effect was in fact related to electromagnetic principles, which also connected it to this energy beam going into the sky. So in the work of Wilhelm Reich, the orgone, or this electromagnetic energy, is an integrative factor. And that also is a very good example to help understand why Indians within them can create an effect around them which might produce rain. Essentially, you could consider that just as the hollow tube that Wilhelm Reich had parked in his pond, which was pointing at the sky, worked as an antenna, or maybe you could also call it a kind of laser device, because it would produce a steady beam going up into the sky. But in that sense, there is something within us and something around us which operates by those principles. So that on the one hand, you can see that the orgasm experience is an electromagnetic phenomenon within us, and that the beam from Wilhelm Reich Cloudbusters was the effect around us. Now, if you just combine that to a more basic principle, then you could say that this electromagnetic field within us also operates around us. And that is what those Indians are doing with their rain dance, that they are able to retune their body, that they can shift from, let's say, the rational and the emotional to a transcendental state, or a trance state, in which their body as a whole starts to resonate and becomes, say, a kind of cloudbuster. And that apparently, or evidently, because at times when it does rain, that will prove that there is something happening there, then the formation of the rain shows that whatever happened within those people also happened around those people. You too might know people who have the experience that they can look at clouds and make them dissolve, which means that our eyes are like a laser beam, or our thought can be projected like a laser beam, and that it is possible to have effects on the clouds by our attention or our focused mind. Our focused mind, of course, is again electromagnetic principle, the software within the hardware. So what we are talking about in this rain dance phenomenon is a bit the principle of the dance of Shiva, half male, half female, half body, half spirit, which is the link between the physical and the metaphysical, or the physical and the phasical, or the tangible and the intangible, or say the matter and the electromagnetic phase space, or the quantum space. Essentially, that's what all the religions and all mystic trainings are about, that there is a link between the material realm of, let's call it, Earth and our physical body, and the immaterial realm of, let's call it, our thoughts and the quantum field of information. And that is just about learning how to connect them. And there are other people who have been looking into this. Some of the people brought us a bit closer in the understanding of this relationship between electromagnetic fields and our body, such as Royal Raymond Rife. He was aware that it is possible to create a radio wave using the standard radio lamp of his time, and thereby to be able to resonate sub cellular structures in the body. Specifically, he was able to look at the virus at the core of cancers, and he was able to measure with his what's called the universal microscope the size of those virus, and as a result he would know the length. And if you can translate the length into the wavelength, then of course you can also translate that into the radio frequency, so then you know which frequency you would need to, let's say, shatter the wine glass, as Caruso was said to do with tapping the wine glass, hearing the sound it makes, singing that same note, and then vibrating the glass to pieces. In that same way, Royal Raymond Rife was able to resonate the virus so that it essentially just fell apart. In his work, he does show that there is that relationship between information, or the radio waves, and matter, in this case the structure of the virus. And that in our body and in our life, we would do well to understand that better. In a way, it's the opposite of the rain dance. In the rain dance, the tribe will create the resonant frequencies as a result of which in the vapor space in the atmosphere, condensation can take place. And Royal Raymond Rife turns that around, so that in the matter sphere, at a viral level, a kind of evaporation can take place. It's the same kind of relationship between the physical and the physical space and the phase space, and how they all interconnect. As I've been describing elsewhere, for me, they are always connected by the zipper of manifestation, which is that you can have a photon jump between atoms, which can then trigger an electron jump within an atom, which can then trigger an electron oscillation between atoms, which can then result in electron bonding of atoms. So you go from photon to the electron to the electron oscillation to the electron bonding, which is essentially that you go from quantum space to atomic space to molecular space to physical space, or people would also call it the physical domain. So we're weaving between the two, and as the story of Shiva and Shakti, the tangible and the intangible, or the physical and the metaphysical, or the bound electrons versus the quantum space, it is that kind of understanding that we are needing here, and that we need to understand in a more concrete and more tangible, but specifically a more real or realistic manner. It is not a talk about theories, but if a rainmaker can do a rain dance, or just look up Wilhelm Reich with his rainmaker device, then you can see that he would just crank the wheel, point the tubes at some part of the cloud, and have the rain come out. So there is experience that these things work. Of course, a kind of similarity is now found in the way that some governments are actually working with cloud seeding. Those are the condensed trails behind the airplane, which are not condensed trails but actually seeding with micro dust. And some people already pointed out that the kind of micro dust which they're using for that, bismuth and aluminium and other things, are not actually healthy, and they're actually not healthy for the soil either. And that in fact those materials respond to radar waves, so that when have these contrails are seeded into the air, that this also produces layers of micro dust, of metalloid kind of atomic qualities, and of course as it is atomic, it is very small and it will be suspended in the air for a very long time, but this can also interact with radar waves and can bend and reflect radar waves. So there's a quite a number of people who have pointed out that what's being done at that level might not be as clever as what the Indians did with their rain dance. Of course, these kind of secret government programs, which quite a number of people already know about now, learned from the Indians doing the rain dance and from the work of Wilhelm Reich and others. And one of those others is Tom Bearden. He's one of the people who showed that at the level of the electromagnetic fields, there is a lot more that we need to understand, which goes beyond the standard school book electromagnetic formulae. And the electromagnetic formulas of the, say, the Maxwell equations, actually the equations that people learn are not the Maxwell equation but the Heaviside equation, which are reduced equations. And the reduction lies there in that Maxwell equation was based on Hamiltonians, which is, say, four-dimensional vectors, while Heaviside reduced that into the more standard, smaller type of vectors. And as a result, some parts were lost in the original Maxwell equations. If you look at the real mathematics underlying that, then the Maxwell equations, which have four components, actually need to be extended to have eight components, because with the four components you can define the relationship between space and time, and this, say, this four dimensions of time, or I prefer to call them dimensionalities of time, and four dimensionalities of space. In space, three of them are real and one of them is virtual or imaginary, as you would call it in mathematics, which is the zero point. And in the same way, in time-space, there are three imaginary frequencies, say the X, Y, and Z axis, but only when they come together and turn inside out, or when they can rotate with respect to themselves, then you have the fourth component, which is what people call time, the cyclicity or the repetition of things. In the same way, you have four vectors of space, and four vectors of time. Likewise, you have four vectors of energy, four vectors of consciousness. The vectors of energy are, say, the four fundamental forces of physics, and the four dimensions of consciousness are all imaginary. Basically, they're the conscious, the subconscious, the unconscious, and the out-of-conscious. They're similar relationships of coherence in phase space. So once you can understand that, then you can also understand that if you have four dimensions with four dimensionalities each, which means that you have 4 by 4 by 4 by 4 dimensionalities to account for, then eight vector space or an octonion will already give you more information than just a Hamiltonian four-dimensional space. I just bring this up to give you a bit of understanding of how in mathematics complexities are able to be expressed by, let's say, more complex kind of mathematics. In this case, the complex mathematics is where they combine real and imaginary components, which means linear lines and circular circuits. The imaginary components are circles, the real components are lines, and it's just a matter of, let's say, eating with knife and fork. If you have only the linear line or the knife to work with, and you don't have a fork or a spoon to work with, the ways you can manipulate things and operate things are much more limited. So there is an advantage to use those kind of mathematics, and Tom Bearden is one of those people who understands that. So he also understood that if you look at the equations of the electromagnetic field, as has been reduced by the Heaviside equations, then you don't get the full information. You actually need to go beyond that into the original Maxwell equations, which are formulated in terms of those Hamiltonians, and they are actually representations of what Faraday had found, because Faraday was the guy who was looking into the electromagnetic dynamics and realized that if you put a needle, if you suspended a needle on a thread, a conductive thread like a thin copper wire, in mercury, and then put a charge on it, that you could detect the motions. And he described all the motions that he found, and as a result of which it was clear that there is a linear current, but around that you will have a circular effect of a magnetic field. And so that led to the notion of electromagnetism, and actually it was Maxwell who then fully integrated that by giving a formulation for it. And that was then the basis of the understanding of what we now know to be the electromagnetic field. And if you follow the development of science, then you know that people first studied matter, then found molecules, and then found atoms, which is in fact a change from the physics of matter and the chemistry of molecules and the electromagnetism of atoms. But that means that as atoms are the basis of things physical, as they're considering it nowadays, then the atoms, being electromagnetic, are the foundation of everything chemical. That means that everything that's chemical is electromagnetic. And chemistry is then the foundation of physics. But physics being chemical, and chemical being electromagnetic, that means that physics is electromagnetic. That's also why I work with this zipper of manifestation, the photon jump, electron oscillation, electron bonding. Then you can see that this reality as a whole is simply an electromagnetic field with different kinds of coherence. And evidently, now that we have tetrionics, we can have a very much better understanding of how that operates and how that's done. But let me first come back to Tom Bearden, because he realized that when you work with the Maxwell equation, that there are components which actually go deeper than what in electromagnetism is normally studied, that there are local and integral effects which are all too often ignored. But that also means that there is a link between local and general effects. call it again, the Indian doing the dance and the rain coming from the clouds, the local and the far away effect. Tom Bearden also describes this in the way that it can be done or activated using radar frequencies. There are possibilities to have non-directed radio frequencies, which is groups of frequencies or white noise ratios, and within white noise radio, pixels, you can have patterns. This is something which in the 1950s, 60s was discovered in Russia. There was something called the Woodpecker radar system, and I imagine that that large radar array, which was found outside of Chernobyl, was one of those devices, hundreds of meters wide and up to 100 meter high, able to pulse radio frequencies. And what was discovered was that the Russians used radar, but they didn't have a fixed radar frequency, as was done in the West. Instead, there was a white noise kind of effect, and that's what Tom Bearden then described, that if you understand this white noise package, you can actually have patterns within the white noise, so like waves within the white noise, as a result of which you can create interference patterns at a distance. And that is again a kind of relationship between what you can find in the rain dance and the rain clouds. That the rain clouds will have their patterns of dynamic, there's different gradients of temperature when water evaporates, when water condenses. Immediately you will have the heat exchange from the water to the environment. So you will have local focal areas where the temperature goes up or down, and the environment which then needs to either provide or absorb that temperature. In a more general understanding as provided by tetrionics, you can see that temperature is actually a specific form of electromagnetic frequencies or an electromagnetic dynamic, which means that you're actually working with an electromagnetic dynamic in that cloud space or in that environmental space as the counterpart of the electromagnetic dynamic as it takes place in us, in human beings. And in the story on sex and orgasm, I already described that orgasm is in fact this transition from physical contact to a hormonal chemical response to a neuronal electrical response to a consciousness phase coherent response, so that in our body we actually feel how we can operate this. But what we are describing now is this say Shiva Shakti relationship between us and the environment, because all of it is an electromagnetic field. So Tom Bearden realized that radar systems can make use of these different forms of radio frequencies or radio waves or electromagnetic patterns, which are at the core of the original Maxwell equations. And when you look into the work of Constantin Meil, who also understood that you need to work with a full Maxwell equations, then out of those full Maxwell equations, it is evident that there are those local and there are those integral effects. And Constantin Meil also called attention on these integral effects, that the space as a whole can change. You can compare that to the beach and the ocean and the waves curving, curling and breaking on the shore, but that movement of the waves, as would be say the foundation of electromagnetic theory, because it's about frequencies, oscillations and cycles, and crashing waves is part of that story, then you can also understand that when the tide goes in or out, that the effect of the breakers on the coast will take place in a different space, and that tide coming in or out is what you would then call the scalar waves of the field. The whole field becomes larger or smaller, and as Constantin Meil points out, it depends on what you look at, how much you will see. So if you look at the scale of the universe, then measuring something by meter length is not very practical or relevant. When you look at the scale of atoms, then measuring by the meter scale are not practical or relevant. So all measurements are always in proportion to what you're looking at. You could say that when you look at an atom, then the atom sort of pulls a circle, and the diameter or the size of that circle would be the measurement that you're actually dealing with. The same when you're measuring the cell, the size of the cell is thereabouts the measurement unit that you would be working with. When you're measuring the universe, likewise, you would need to measure at the scale of the diameter of the universe and use that as your metric unit of length. It also means that you cannot use the one metric unit of length at a different level, so this scalar change actually has profound implications, so that you when you go from the universal to the cell scale or to the subatomic scale or the atomic scale. And by the way, Nassim Haramein says that if you would put those on axis, have put the universal scale on the vertical axis, put the quantum scale, the atomic scale, on the horizontal axis, then halfway between them on the 45 degree angle, that's where you would approximately find the size of our cell. So that means that our cell is sort of halfway between the very smallest and the very largest, which would put it at the tipping point for the interaction between those two, which is quite interesting, of course, because that means that we can indeed operate at the micro scale and at the macro scale, at the atomic scale and at the universal scale, which is what the rain dance principle is essentially all about. So when you go from the understanding of Tom Bearden and that of Constantine Mile further onward, then you can go to one of the people who already described this fundamental basis, which is Nikola Tesla. And in his approach, he realized that there is this direct relationship between the electromagnetic magnetic realm and our own physiological functioning. So in his description, you can then see that there is this direct link between, say, physics and phasics, or the dancing Indian and the rain clouds. And that on that basis, it is necessary to understand that and stop disregarding our own relationship to the universe as a whole. In other words, the idea that there is a physical reality which is as it is, and we just are onlookers and we basically cannot do anything about it anyhow. And some tribes call it fatalism or defatism, that the world is already fixed and ready, and whatever you do, it has no significance whatsoever, which would be the case if the principles of dead matter would apply to the universe. And the principles of dead matter are those of verifiable, repeatable, predictable, which basically means that it is inert, it is invariant, it cannot change, which is precisely the definition of dead matter. Or if you look at that in classical terminology, it would be the definition of hell, a closed system. But we all know that matter is composed of molecules, which are dynamic, that molecules are composed of atoms, which can actually compose and decompose with respect to each other. And we also understand that at the subatomic level, it is all about the quantum making the phase change, yes or no. And we also know that this quantum phase change is not material. Tetrionics makes that very explicit. In my work, I show that the quantum change is actually the foundation of freedom of choice, which is where we can make the immediate leap from the reality of dead matter of science to the realization of freedom of choice in the science of life. And then, of course, we have a much wider scope of reality, because reality is actually a realization. The reality that we know is simply the anatomy of the physiology of our realization as a noun. But we know that if the realization as a noun is the consequence of the realization as a verb, which in our body would be the regulatory system. And in our body we see that the regulatory system is based on the more deeper layering level of consciousness. So in our body we can see that we go from consciousness to the regulatory system to the physiology, and that the anatomy is simply a consequential result of that. And in our realization we can see that we go from the freedom of choice to the interaction with the electromagnetic system, and then can have the effect thereof on the chemistry of the world, and thereby have the result in the physical. So consciousness leading to the regulatory system, leading to the physiology, leading to the anatomy, also applies to creation, leading to realization as a noun, leading to realization as a creation leading to realization as a verb, where you are actively interactive with it, leading to realization as a noun, a process. leading to reality as the structured construct. So this is the relationship, as you can find it described in system theory, from the information state to the regulation state, or the state regulation to the process of the state to the structure of the state. So these principles of system theory, which you can then find in the relationship between integration, transformation, process and structure, are actually also the same as the principles of alchemy. There they were called fire, air, water and earth, which is basically simply again the formulation of the quantum space, then the atomic space, the molecular space and the physical space, with linking them, this zipper of manifestation, the photon leap, the electron leap, the electron oscillation, the electron bonding. So in all that I'm addressing right now, the notion that we are living in one integral electromagnetic field is crucial, it stands central. And by understanding that it is an integral electromagnetic field, we can then understand how it goes from pure phase space to an atomic space, to a molecular space, to a material space. And again, as I addressed in other talks, that's where tetrionics really helps understand that, because it actually shows you how it works. And it actually makes evident that this phase space, which used to be called the ether space, or it was called the void, or the subatomic space, all this, what comes before the atomic, so before the subatomic particles, when there are no particles as yet, that domain is the foundation of everything. And now tetrionics, we can simply call it the quantum, tetrionic quantum space. And then we can see how that then produces the atomic, the molecular and the physical. And it is that relationship which we actually see in that principle of the rain dance, that if you are able to phase tune your internal frequencies and your internal body processes at the electromagnetic level, then you will have an effect around you. So that's where we then come to the, say, the emotional or the active operational part of the rain dance. As the saying says, if you you can't see the dancer but for the dance, or the other way around, you cannot see the dance but by the dancer. The dancer is simply the medium, and the dance is the process within that activates it. So when the Indians are doing their rain dance, they're actually internally doing something which is very equivalent to the shift into orgasm, except that they do it as a non-sexual, but as a full body principle. But the same principle, as a physical activity, they dance into trance, as a result of which there is a hormonal shift, there's a change of feeling. Different hormones lead to a different conductivity in the neuronal system. The different conductivity in the neuronal system leads to a different cohesion in the firing patterns of the neuron. The neuronal network becomes an integral network. It starts to function internally rather than externally. It becomes a kind of antenna grid, quite literally. And as a result, with this ionically charged hormonal exuberance and this electric charged neuronal activation, the whole electromagnetic body field starts to operate in a different way. In a way, you can say that it is the equivalent of a laser device. And so it can indeed project microwave radiations to the world around us. Let me come back to the physical side of that. In the work of Joseph Farrell, I've mentioned him before, he's been looking into the belief systems of people and realize that cultures have their own belief systems, cultures have their own developments, they have their own technologies. And by looking at the technologies, he realized that some of the most recent developments of electromagnetic field and radar technologies were already used, presumably, probably, by the Egyptians. He uses some of the old Sumerian texts as the basis for the understanding that in the countries around there was a great fear for the pyramids. The Sphinx lying right next to the pyramids was actually in Egyptian still called Abu Hol, which is the father of evil. But Joseph Farrell says that actually the evil came from the pyramids because they were a kind of radar devices, as I described before, for the Russians, but in this case tuned so that they could transmit or project radio frequency fields and different kinds of coherence to remote spaces. And the same was used in the HARP arrays in Alaska and Norway and other places. Once you have a radio wave transmitter, then you can bounce that on off the ionosphere and essentially direct it where you want it. And so Joseph Farrell describes that the pyramids were actually a kind of radioactive weapon, having the ability to create implosions at a distance. Those implosions at a distance become understandable once you stop thinking about radio waves as you would have it in terms of a radio station or a radio signal, because most of the theories describe radio frequencies as simply linear, that you have a oscillation in one direction, which would be the direction of the antenna. But of course in nature there are many more possibilities, and as I described before, time is actually four-dimensional. There is only one of those four dimensionalities which is circular or spherical, and the three other ones are, say, the core elements of the sphere without them being as yet connected. So once you understand that there is that possibility of phase fields to be four-dimensionally oriented, which means you have an x-axis, a y-axis, and a z-axis of oscillations, but at the fourth point, which is the zero point, they are connected, then you can actually direct radio frequencies whichever way you want them. To understand that, we now have the description of Dennis Gabor, the creator of the hologram, because that's essentially where the notion became very explicit and evident that phase fields can have a coherence in a very elaborate and very voluminous manner. Most people would understand that if you have a barrel of water and you unplug a peg at the bottom, then water will flow out as a stream, and it will sort of bounce on the environment, creating waves, and then essentially it will disappear in the soil or disappear into turbulence. The underlying principle therein is that there is a relationship between pressure, flow, oscillation, and integration, or at that same level, disintegration, which we could be calling turbulence. The work of Dennis Gabor shows that you can go from pressure to flow to an oscillation to an integration, and that is essentially the whole principle of a laser. There you would see it as you have a spark. You then reflect that so that you have an oscillation, then you reverberate that so that you have a standing wave. You oscillate the wave so that it interferes with itself, becomes coherent, and then it can actually superimpose on itself to such a strength that it can pass beyond the mirror, which sort of defines the wavelength of that laser system. So in that laser principle, you actually have the understanding of what happens in the electromagnetic domain when you are able to phase tune and phase aggregate, let's call it, you are able to create a phase array of frequencies. And yes, you can do that as a harp radio station and then use the ionosphere to bounce it off somewhere else and get effects out of that, like Joseph P. Farrell described and Tom Bearden addressed. But you can also understand that that same principle operates within our body, as was addressed by Wilhelm Reich and Royal Raymond Rife. So then the other part of it is that all this technology that we know of in radio and radar engineering, and which we find also in computers and computer networks, is actually taking place in our body as well. And at that level, then the notion of a rain dance is not laughable, but it really asks you to open your mind to see if there would be any relationship between somebody doing a rain dance and it raining somewhere. And if you don't think at any deeper level, you would just laugh it off and write it off as coincidence if it starts to rain when people are doing a rain dance. But if you understand that the universe is one integral force, a uni one verse vibration, and all of these vibrations are connected, the connectedness of those vibrations can be understood in terms of this hologram of Dennis Gabor, which of course has these laser-like principles implied. And then suddenly you can make use of those descriptions of Constantine Meil or Tom Bearden and Tetrionics, Nikola Tesla, to understand that in this wave phase domain there are very many possibilities for frequency coherence, ranging from the level where we can operate it in our body to micro radiation and to coherent fields and coherent bursts and coherent patterns of those kind of coherent radiation fields. And as Phil Callahan described, that is the essence of a phonon or an orgone. As he said, an orgone is basically a phonon oscillating in 16 directions. I think back of the Hamiltonian, the four, in this case 4x4 array. So non-thinking makes the rain dance very laughable, but thinking makes the rain dance not just intriguing or possible, but also gives a very much deeper level of understanding and meaning. Because it does mean that if you are able to create clouds, you can look at the clouds and make them dissolve, or you can vibrate the cloud levels, even if they're invisible, in the air, and thereby crystallize them and create rain, it does mean that your body and your environment are much more intimately connected than you just being a passive victim of the reality around you. As I said, as soon as you understand that, then you can realize that reality is actually a form of realization, but that the realization you have is actually the realization that you make, so that the realization noun actually comes from the realization of verb, and that the realization is actually your act of being a creator in creation. So that's where I would like to sort of round off this essay on the rain dance. The rain dance, or the concept of the rain dance, is merely a trigger to think beyond our normal understanding, yet still using normal logic. And the conclusion is that we have all the information. We have the physics, we have the mathematics, we even have the radio and radar technology to know that we can change the phase arrangement of the atmosphere, the ionosphere and the vapor sphere around us. That evidently we will have effect on the environment, but that we need to take that into account, that we need to become conscious of it. And this is at a different level of than saying that the oil industry, which is actually the banking industry, is trying to sell you oil and trying to have you burn all kind of carbon elements into the atmosphere. It is rather that you have a choice if you want to burn fuel or if you want to use electromagnetic energies. And once you realize that, in a way, this whole culture is trapped in the dream or this nightmare of money, and once you step out of it and realize it is not about burning oil, and it is not about having a taxi meter on an electric current which is produced by somebody else, but that actually the whole universe is an electromagnetic field, and that we need to understand how we too are in electromagnetic field and interact with it, I think back of the rain dance principle, then in which way do your emotions and your excitements, the hormonal and the neuronal components in your experience, trigger or fuel rain or other circumstances around you? Because that's the deeper level of this understanding, that if this reality is just an integral electromagnetic system in different states of coherence, then how is that different from a videodrome or a television screen or a virtual reality goggle set? To which extent is this reality actually an electromagnetic field? And is your body your cursor in the program by which you can, through your emotions, thus hormonal, and through your thoughts, thus neuronal, interact with this reality and actually go from a reality to a realization and see that when you do the dance, the rain will come. But also, as the fairy tale has it, that where you walk in the wake of your steps, the flowers will come out of the earth. You do have the choice if you're actually burning fossil fuel or if you, together with others, are creating something which improves on the quality of this earth. And in doing that, you'll automatically discover that destroying things you can very easily do by yourself. You can create hell all alone for yourself and for others. But to create paradise, to make things better, you actually need to work together. And in order to be able to work together, you need to be able to think together. And that requires something of, let's say, a cloud exploding or condensing a cloudscape, not in the air, but in the minds of other people. That's called the inspiration of other people, or that other people can come to similar ideas. And this is not the manipulation of people by advertising or religion or education or government propaganda. But this is the direct, let's say, contagious health of people sharing ideas which actually do work and do work on improving the environment around us. And essentially that is the wavelength of telepathy. And so that is actually the essence of the rain dance, that yes, telepathy does exist, but telepathy doesn't just go from one individual to the other. And as mentioned before, you need to have the right hormonal charge and you need to have the right neuronal charge, because the yin and the yang need to combine together so that you can go from the chemical to the electromagnetic into the conscious levels. But then you will notice that we are sharing our thoughts, that there is a lot of telepathy going on between us, and that it's just a matter of being able to discern that you do not respond to the people who are purely intellectual but cannot live it. They don't have the emotional connection, or the ones who are purely emotional and simply destroy things around them because they cannot get the connectedness to other people or other situations, and that within you, you actually learn to combine both. And the more you can learn to combine the neuronal and the hormonal activation, then thereby you will also discover that you can more easily communicate with other people, and you will more easily experience that you can improve the weather around you, so that when rain is needed, rain will come, and when sunshine is desired, sunshine can be. Just look around, ask around. There will be lots of people who are able to tell you that they did have experience of the weather suddenly changing, and lots of examples of groups of people doing dances and clear skies appearing overhead, or in the case of the rain dance, clouds coming and rain coming. So the topic is actually not the rain dance, but the topic is actually the relationship between you and your environment, not just that of Earth, but that also of humanity, and that at the core of your relationship between you and the other or others lies the internal balance and the internal connectedness between the hormones and the neurons in your own body and thus in your own life. As Wilhelm Reich pointed out, sexuality and orgasm is part of that learning process. As others have pointed out, meditation and contemplation are part of that process. In fact, there are very many examples of that process, because the process of the relationship between the neurons and the hormones is essential in our being. And so you have already a lot of experiences of it and with it. It's just a matter that within you, you analyze it and realize that things don't happen out of luck or by happenstance, but that when you change the emotional, or when you change the intellectual, I'd say the right brain and the left brain, and you are able to pivot that in the middle, the location of the pineal gland, then you're able to make the balance between the forebrain and the right hind brain, which is your individual perspective and the environmental perspective. And that's actually the story of Bhagavad Gita, in the relationship between Arjuna, the forebrain, and Krishna, the hindbrain. So it's not just about Arjuna and Krishna, the front brain and hindbrain, but also about being able to activate and inactivate when needed the left brain and the right brain separately, or are in conjunction. And that again is a kind of laser principle. Essentially, that is the lesson of the rain dance, that you're a kind of laser device, and it's up to you to create a hologram around you from your limited perspective, or from a perspective which you can share with a lot of people, with all of humanity, or all life forms on Earth.